show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Engel from the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thanks for tuning into this episode. This one is going to be a little bit different than what you're used to. As you heard in the introduction, the Kansas City Baseball Vault is a show that tries to cover the past, present, and future of Kansas City baseball. And what you've probably noticed lately is that a lot of the focus is on the present. And, you know, with the Royals performing well, they're in first place. The present is kind of where it goes, but we haven't covered as much of the prospects that we have in the past, and we haven't covered a lot of Kansas City baseball history as we have in the past. And that's something that Jeff and I kind of want to get back to when this show was initially kind of brought up when we were covering Union Broadcasting way back when. It was done so with the assistance of the Kansas City Baseball Historical Society, which also brought in a lot of old Kansas City A's and some old Royals and things like that. And so we had built-in guests and things like that to go over the past. But what we're trying to do now is, you know, do a little bit more storytelling about things that happened in the past. So that's something to look forward to the second half of this season, going into the off season. We're probably going to be doing a little bit more on Kansas City history, as well as some of the present, and we're going to continue to talk about prospects as well, and everything that's relevant to the Royals, but we do want to try to diversify what we're talking about. This episode is kind of the first step in that. It's also a rebroadcast of a sort. It was originally recorded back in November of 2011, back when we were called the Royal Man Report. You're going to hear Troy Olson, you're going to hear Chris Kamler, also known as the Fake Ned, and then you'll hear myself and Jeff Herr, who you are used to on the Vault. But we were talking with Bob Kendrick, who was kind enough that day to spend a whole hour in studio with us. We were recording at the old Kansas City Ice House at 31st and Wyandotte, which is where all of this started from. So I felt that that was an appropriate place to kind of step towards this journey back into the past. So it's basically Bob Kendrick telling stories about Kansas City baseball and the Negro Leagues and the Monarchs and Satchel Paige and Buck O'Neill. And I mean, who wouldn't love that? So if you're a newer listener, this may be the first time you hear this, which it was almost 4 years ago now. So I think that's fair game. And if you've been listening from the beginning, well, this is one of the best shows we probably have ever done. And I think it's fair to revisit it. Bob Kendrick does so much for preserving Kansas City baseball history that I think anytime you get a chance to listen to him, I'm fine with it. So go ahead and take a listen. That's going to be the entire show. It's going to be about 40-some minutes of Bob Kendrick telling baseball stories, which is not too shabby. Before we go to that, though, I do want to remind everybody that the Kansas City Baseball Vault and Kelly's Westport Inn, our title sponsor, will be holding a watch party during the All-Star Game on July 14th. The game starts at 6 o'clock Central Time. It's 7 Eastern, 6 Central Time, since they're in Cincinnati. And we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be Jeff Herr, Chris Kamler, and myself recording a podcast live. We're inviting a lot of people out there. We want to get a lot of the people that we watch games with on Twitter to come out and kind of share the experience while we celebrate what's going to be likely 4 or 5 Royals starting the game and probably 2 or 3 reserves. I think it's going to be a pretty special day. Working on trying to get some guests to show up and kind of share in the celebration. And we're also putting together some things for some giveaways. So maybe some Kelly's gift certificates, a couple of books, maybe. There may even be some T-shirts. So if you go to KansasCityBaseballVault.com or RoyalsPodcast.com, I'll try to get the information up there. You can also follow me at Michael Engel, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-E-N-G-E-L. And I'll be tweeting about it every day from now until the event. There's a Facebook event that you can join. So I'll get that out there. And the link will be included on this post as well, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on RoyalsPodcast.com. So again, that's going to be July 14th at Kelly's Westport Inn. They're always great to us. They, you know, great drink specials. Even when they're not doing baseball games, they usually every weekend they have a live band. So definitely check them out. They help us to produce this show. So if you enjoy the show, they are the destination for your Royals baseball viewing locales, so to speak. So what's going to follow from here will be the old Royal Man report. Again, this is from November 2011, and we're talking to Bob Kendrick. There may be some references to the Buck O'Neill celebrations, obviously, because this is almost 3.5 years ago. Those dates are obsolete. But all in all, enjoy it. It's Bob Kendrick. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back into the Royal Man Report. We are now heading into our special edition of the Buck 100 Royal Man Report, as we are joined in studio by Bob Kendrick, the president of Negro League Museum. And I want to tell a little story that if you didn't tune in last week, Fake Ned told a story about how last week we had a Royal Man tweet up out at the Negro League Museum at the historic 18th and Vine District. It was Fake Ned Yost, Mike Engel, and loyal listeners Patty, Casey, and Scott Drinks Coke on Twitter. I was unable to go because I was called away for a family emergency. It was the first visit for Fake Ned and Mike, and they were blown away by the museum. Bob was very nice enough to take everybody on a tour through the museum, and thanks again so much for giving up your last Saturday afternoon. Thank you for giving up the time on Sunday, and now this Sunday, too. We've been thoroughly impressed with the operation and of the Negro League Museum, and more so what you've done. You were kind of telling us how they've kind of pushed you into Twitter because of some different promotional groups that have come through and helped you guys out and what have you. And you've kind of embraced that, and that's really cool because a lot of industries haven't embraced Twitter yet, and that's a great thing for you. And it's, of course, allowed us to get to you because we had never thought to do something like this had it not been for Twitter. So first off, Bob Kendrick, thank you so much, and welcome to the Royal Man Report.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
So let's just get started with what this is about. Tell us what's in the works for the Buck 100.
Ooh, man, it's a lot of stuff going on. You know, there was no way in the world you could celebrate Buck's birthday for one day. You know, and so we put together a series of events to try and get people excited about who I think is one of the absolute finest human beings ever in Buck O'Neill, who happens to also have been a great Kansas Cityan. But, you know, Buck was important not only to KC, but to our nation. And so the formal activities and festivities began this coming Friday, November the 11th. We want everybody to go out to First Watch Restaurant, the great folks over at First Watch, all 10 area restaurants donating their day's profits to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in honor of Buck's 100th birthday. 100% of their profits to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum all day long when people go in and dine. So come on out. I'll be over at the Westport location with some of the Negro League players and Casey Wolf, who will also be over at the Westport location from 8 until 9 a.m. On Friday morning, and the guys from the old Negro League players will be out signing autographs, taking photographs with people in the whole nine yards. And then there are also members of Royals alumni who will be making appearances between 8 and 9 at select area First Watch restaurants. Go to NLBM.com to see where your favorite Royal player might be, a Royal alumni player, I should say, might be on Friday. You know, these guys have been great in doing that for us. First Watch has done that for the last 5 years, and this event continues to get bigger and bigger, and it's a great, great addition to our annual Buck O'Neill birthday celebration. And then, of course, on Saturday, November the 12th, we have a lot of fun. I'll be out hanging with you guys, and we're going to try to Hey, I think a couple of you guys say you're going to run. I'm going to walk.
The two fattest guys in the studio think we're going to try to run. I actually did it last year. If you go to tumblr.caseyroyalman.com, or I guess it's caseyroyalman.tumblr.com, you can actually see my header picture on there is the picture of me crossing the finish line at the Buck 2.2 last year. And it's no record time, but I was glad to run it. I'm a huge supporter of Buck O'Neill, and I'm super excited to be participating in that again. Tell us a little bit about the plaques that are going up honor of this.
And you know, it's a great campaign. It's called the Buck O'Neill All Century Team Campaign. And what we've tried to do is get people to consider donating at least $100 in memory of Buck and in support of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. But the caveat was for every person that makes at least $100 donation between now and November 13th, they will have an opportunity to have their name or someone that they designate name permanently recognized at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. You know, guys, it's rare that $100 buys you perpetuity. But in this instance, $100 genuinely buys you perpetuity because your name or, again, that person that you designate's name will be there for what we hope will be the test of time as it relates to the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. And so, you know, our goal was to try to get at least 1,000 people in the metropolitan KC area to do that. We are moving great with this campaign. We got a week left. We're gaining in about 600 people. So this is a big week for us. We're hoping that we can get that final big push to try and get Kansas City to step up and remember Buck. And really, there's no greater way to remember Buck than by supporting Buck's museum. I mean, the museum, Negro Leagues Museum, meant everything to Buck O'Neill. And so this is a great way to rally the community, but also, and as it related to the museum, build stakeholders in this great museum.
And on that note, I mean, real quick, the Negro Leagues Museum is at 18th and Vine, historic district in Kansas City, but it wasn't always in the great, you know, the incredible facility that it's in now.
No.
It was just an office, right?
Yeah, man, I think the studio might be bigger. The studio might be bigger.
Yeah, Kamler just said the studio is very small. For those of you that haven't ever really taken in how small our studio is, it's about the room of about the size of maybe like a two-size office, two-person office.
Well, it's maybe a dorm.
Yeah, dorm room, that's a good example.
And guys, you know, Buck and some of the other local Negro Leaguers who were here in the area at that time sat around the table just like we're sitting right here, and they literally took turns paying the monthly rent to keep that office space open. And of course, with it, our dreams of someday building a facility that would not only pay rightful tribute to one of the great chapters in baseball history, but what our visitors discovered, one of the great chapters in American history. So, you know, this museum is as grassroots an organization as you will ever encounter. But really, it has made that journey that much more special. You know, yeah, we would have loved to have had a huge endowment when we started this thing. But, you know, the fact that everybody has pitched in and rallied to help build something that is special and is meaningful really kind of makes you feel good. And I think for all of us, this is just a labor of love.
Now, I haven't been to the museum nearly as much as I'd like to, unfortunately. It's just sometimes it doesn't fit in with the scheduling and what have you. But one time that I had some friends in town, and we were going to go to the museum because it's part of any time I have somebody come, we go to the Negro League Museum. And the day that I went was actually the day that Buck died. And I remember walking into that museum, and I don't know if it was you or somebody else that did a speech that day, it was the formal announcement that, yes, Buck O'Neill had passed, and, you know, just talked about Buck. And you could just see everybody that just happened to be there, people like me that had just wandered in for that day, and people that had planned to go because they knew there was going to be something for Buck O'Neill. There was such a heaviness in that place like no other. You know, that museum really came alive that day because of Buck's passing. Everybody in there all of a sudden became renewed. And the great thing about Buck is I've had people, we didn't get anybody to call in, but everybody that you talk to talks about Buck O'Neill. And, for example, one of our good friends, Patty Casey, one of his friends, she tells a story about how she knew Buck growing up, and just thinking about Buck still brings tears to her eyes because he was such an influential part of her life, helping her stay on the straight and narrow, and just being an all around, you know, aspect of her life. And so I think everybody's got a story like that. And so when you are out at the museum and people get a chance to talk to you, what kind of stories do you hear about Buck?
I mean, you know, first and foremost, almost everywhere I go, someone has a story about Buck O'Neill. And that's why I think it was so, you know, it's hard to believe that it's actually been 5 years since he passed because, again, almost every circle that I'm in, someone wants to share a story about Buck O'Neill. And, you know, one of my favorites, I was speaking over to the Gladstone Chamber of Commerce, and after I was done, a guy comes up to me and says, "Man, you know how I met Buck O'Neill?" You know, I'm like, "Okay, now how, man?" You know, and so he says, "I'm over at Swope." And, of course, Buck knew every blade of grass over at Swope Memorial playing golf. He loved playing golf. And so the guy says, "I'm over at Swope, and I'm playing, and I'm standing on the tee box, and I get up, and I hit my tee shot, and I just kind of dribble it off the tee. Well, I look up, and this old black man comes over to me. He looks me dead in my eye and said, "You ever thought about taking up bowling?" And he breaks out into this big grin. He gives me a hug, and that was Buck O'Neill. That's how he met Buck on the golf course, you know, and Buck was so quick with it. And that was vintage Buck, really. But, you know, everywhere we went, man, I tell you, Buck never met a stranger in his life. And I think that's the thing that endeared him to so many people because, you know, on our travels, everywhere we went, whether we were sitting in the airport, waiting to take a flight to come back home or go somewhere, he'd strike up a conversation. By the time the conversation was over, those two people would sharing, and they would be sharing an embrace as if they'd known each other all their lives. That's a special quality. And I think that's the thing, again, that endeared Buck to so many different people from so many different walks of life.
Now, I know you just recently rejoined the museum as president, but how long have you been involved with the museum?
Oh, man, it goes back to 1993. I started as a volunteer.
And I don't know if everybody else in the studio has noticed this or people out in the live stream, but one thing that I'm noticing very quickly with you is that Buck O'Neill was a major part of your life. I can see this because every time that you mention his name or tell a story, you light up like a kid on Christmas Day. And I think that is so special because that speaks to somebody's legacy so much. I hope that when my time on this earth is done, that there are people that speak well enough of me to say, you know, that guy, he was just crazy. He wore tights of baseball games, but you know, he helped with charities and he helped do good things, and it makes people smile the way that you smile about Buck, because I think that is the greatest end to any legacy that you could ever have. Did you ever hear stories of where people were down on Buck? Like, was there anybody that could not like this guy?
You know, it was almost impossible not to like Buck. I'm sure there were some people out there who probably didn't. And, you know, you would hear some rumblings every now and then among some of the guys within the ranks of the Negro Leagues because Buck had become so popular. You know, and I think there was a little bit of professional jealousy along those lines. But really, you know, Buck was so captivating. He was so engaging and so endearing. It was just almost impossible not to like Buck O'Neill, you know. And so, and you're right. For me, it has been a complete blessing to have had the opportunity to spend so much time with Buck and travel the country. And I always say the smartest thing that I ever did was I kept my mouth closed and listened, because there was certainly a lot of wisdom to impart if you wanted it. He didn't force it on you, but it was there if you wanted it. And I think that was the smartest thing I ever did.
Well, if anybody knows me, you know I have a heck of a time shutting my mouth and listening. And I guess that's why
I guess that's why
I started a podcast. But I am absolutely having the best time on the Royal Man Report right now, being part of this show and having you here in studio. We've got to go out to break here and pay some more bills. But he's going to stay with us. Bob's going to stay with us. We're going to come back on the other side, and I'm going to shut up and listen some more. And we got some more great stories about Buck O'Neill on this special edition Buck 100 episode. Coming right back.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Engel again. I'm just jumping in to remind everybody that on July 14th, Jeff Herr, Chris Kamler, and I are going to be hosting a live podcast at Kelly's Westport Inn on July 14th. That'll be during the All-Star Game, which should be heavily populated by Royals, not only on the coaching staff, but also on the field. So I think it's going to be a really fun event for Royals fans. It's a good chance to come out and meet some folks that you might have only chatted with on Twitter. We're going to try to get some guests into the bar to hang out. Again, it's going to be 21 and over only because it is a bar. But we're going to have some giveaways. There's going to be, you know, there's always drink specials at Kelly's. There's going to be giveaways for, like, gift certificates and books and T-shirts and all kinds of things. It should be a lot of fun. The information is going to be on every podcast that we do for the Kansas City Baseball Vault before then.
I'm going to also put it on Twitter, KC Baseball Vault, the show account. You can also follow us on Facebook. Just search for Kansas City Baseball Vault. We should pop right up. Give us a like, give us a follow. And there's going to be more information. And hopefully we're going to continue to do more events at Kelly's. They have been our sponsor since almost day one. I definitely recommend that you go hang out and watch a ball game there. The bartenders are big Royals fans. They're going to talk baseball with you if you like. And they're going to serve you great beer. So I don't know what else can be better than that. So again, that's July 14th. Kelly's Westport Inn starting about 5:30. The game will start at 6. We're just going to be hanging out most of the night, talking baseball with people, talking with friends and making new friends, seeing old friends. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, that's going to be July 14th at Kelly's Westport Inn for the Kansas City Baseball Vault All-Star Game Watch Party. Now, back to our show with Bob Kendrick from November 2011.
I'm not too much of a singer. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back where we'll root. Root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. One, two, three strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, sit down. This is outstanding. I've been a lot of places. I've done a lot of things that I really like doing. I hit the home run. I hit the Grand Slam home run. I hit for the cycle. I've had a hole in one in golf. I've done a lot of things I like doing. I shook hands with President Truman. Yeah. Oh, man. I shook with the other president, and I am to hug his wife, Hillary. So I've done a lot of things I like doing, but I'd rather be right here right now representing these people that helped build the bridge across the chasm of prejudice, not just the ones like Charlie Pride and me that laid across them. Yeah, this is quite an honor for me. See, I played in the Negro Leagues. Tell you what, the Negro Leagues were nothing like Hollywood tried to make it. The Negro Leagues was the third largest black business in this country. Yeah, push. Black insurances, the white insurances, 10-cent policy, just enough to bury us. Uh-huh. But the black insurances insured our crops, our homes, yeah, our stock. They made millions. Next, Madam C.J. Walker, cosmetologist. You see that pretty hair over there? Don't you see it? Oh, Mrs. Robinson? Tell you what, yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah, Madam C.J. Walker was doing that 100 years ago, and she made millions, to tell you the truth. Madam C.J. Walker was the first black woman millionaire in this country, and to tell you, Madam C.J. Walker might have been the first woman millionaire in the country that earned it. They had other women millionaires, but they inherited the money. Madam C.J. Walker earned it. Next, Negro League Baseball. All you needed was a bus, and we rode in some of the best buses money could buy. Yeah, and a couple of sets of uniforms, you could have 20 of the best athletes that ever lived. And that's who we are representing here today. It was outstanding. And playing in the Negro Leagues, what a lot of you don't know. See, when I played in the Negro Leagues, I first came to the Negro Leagues, 5% of Major League ball players were college men because the Major Leaguers want them right out of high school. Put them in the minor leagues, bring them on in. But Negro Leagues, 40% of Negro leaguers were college men. The reason that was, we always spring trained in a black college town. And that's who we played in spring training, the black colleges. So when school was out, they came play baseball. When baseball season was over, they'd go back to teaching, to coaching, or to classes. That was Negro League baseball. And I'm proud to have been a Negro League ball player. Yeah. Yeah. And I tell you what, they always say to me, Buck, I know you hate people for what they did to you or what they did to your folks. I said, no, man, I never learned to hate. I hate cancer. Cancer killed my mother. My wife died 10 years ago of cancer. I'm single, ladies. A good friend of mine, I hate AIDS. A good friend of mine died of AIDS 3 months ago. I hate AIDS. But I can't hate a human being because my God never made anything ugly. Now, you can be ugly if you want a boy, but God didn't make you that way. Uh-uh. So I want you to light this valley up this afternoon. Martin said agape is understanding, creative, a redemptive goodwill toward all men. Agape is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. And when you reach love on this level, you love all men, not because you like them, not because their ways appeal to you, but you love them because God loved them. And I love Jehovah my God with all my heart, with all my soul, and I love every one of you as I love myself. Now, I want you to do something for me. I'm fixing to get off this stage now. I think I've done my 6 minutes. But I want you to do something for me. I want you to hold hands. Whoever's next to you, hold a hand. Come on, you Hall of Famers. Hold hands. All you people out there, hold hands. Everybody hooked up? Everybody hooked up? Well, and I tell you what. See, I know my brothers up here. My brothers over there, I see some black brothers of mine and sisters out there. I know they can sing. Can you white folks sing? I want you to sing after me. The greatest thing. Come on, everybody. The greatest thing in all of my life is loving you. The greatest thing in all of my life is loving you. The greatest thing in all of my life is loving you. The greatest thing in all of my life is loving you. Thank you, folks. Thank you, folks. Thank you, folks. Thank you, folks. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now sit down. Now sit down. I could talk to you 10 minutes longer, but I got to go to the bathroom.
And welcome back into the Royal Man Report. Thanks to Aaron Gunnerk from the Big Dumb Fun Show, of course, our producer. He would make sure that all the music and clips go together for us. And Take Me Out to the Ball Game by Buck O'Neill hits home for me. I do a Monday night show, and we haven't been on in a while, but we're going to come back here soon. But I do a Monday night show with Bill Ivey on I-70 Baseball. Follow them on Twitter at I-70 Baseball. They're another blogging site. Great for Cardinals and Royals coverage. He sent me the speech from Buck O'Neill at the Hall of Fame, and it's about 8 minutes. And so to not take time away
from Bob, and because his time is so valuable, we don't want to keep him here any longer. We have to. We're going to insert that post-production for anybody listening live. It'll be on the post show at some, either at the end or maybe in this right before this segment. But in that, he talks a lot about going through the trials and tribulations and everything that was Buck O'Neill. But you were sharing with us off the air a little bit of what you thought during that speech.
Yeah, you know, as I went back and looked at the video of the speech and then, of course, saw photographs from it, you know, I can now tell that he wasn't himself. You can see it in his eyes. And so, you know, and it's so, sometimes it's easy to go back in retrospect to kind of start to put the pieces together. And, you know, there were certainly telltale signs that something wasn't right. And, of course, Buck, being Buck, never ever let on that anything was wrong. I think Buck knew he was sick a lot longer and well before he ever mentioned anything to any of us, because he didn't want us worried. He didn't want us pitying him. He didn't want us to be concerned. He just, that was just Buck. He was, you know, he was not going to be a burden, or in his mind become a burden to anyone. And so, you know, he kept all of this to himself. And now as I go back and look, I can kind of piece it together, and you can see it. And the thing was, you never, you know, a guy 94 years old, you just don't know when he's going to finally start acting like he's 94. But again, I don't know what 94 is supposed to be. But, you know, Buck seemingly defied age. And so he was so youthful, he was so spry, he was so charismatic, that when I started to notice these signs of him slowing down, you just almost say, well, you know, the man is 94 years old. And so, but in retrospect, you could kind of see something wasn't right.
Yeah, it's I recently, this past week, I went back and read Joe Posnanski's fantastic account of Buck O'Neill and that, you know, that rise up to the Hall of Fame, I guess elections, for lack of a better term, The Soul of Baseball, which is a fantastic book, one of my favorite baseball books. And there's so many just great moments in that book. One of them is, you know, just the kind of irony of how Buck O'Neill does all this work. You know, he's the spokesman for this entire generation of players, almost, who have been left out of the Hall of Fame. And when it comes down to it, he's not elected and he's not brought in. Go tell us that story of kind of afterwards, as he's reading the list of names of the people who did get in.
Well, you know, he was so excited, man. And, you know, and as I was sharing with you guys when you were down at the museum, I think I could have handled it better had it been one or two people that had gotten inducted. So you would have said that, okay, the process was so stringent and it was so, you know, so challenging that we had to look at these criterias, and so we went with one or two people. But when you put 17 in and you leave Buck out, now that one was a hard pill for me to swallow. But when I delivered the news to Buck that 17 of his colleagues had gotten in, he hit the table in utter jubilation. He is excited. He is genuinely excited. Joe Paz and myself, we're not as excited as Buck was, because for me, there was no limit. They could have put all 35 in. And so once you put 17 in, the process already is, if you believe the process is going to be watered down, it's already watered down at this point. So there was no reason that you couldn't put number 18 in. And so, but Buck is genuinely happy. And when he asked me, he said, do you know the names? Well, I didn't have that information at that point in time. And as I mentioned, the very next words that came out of his mouth is, I wonder if they'll ask me to speak. And Joe Posnanski was sitting opposite of Buck. And he looks at Buck, and, you know, Joe is already, he's turned red now, he's mad. And he's like, Buck, you wouldn't do that, would you? And Buck said, of course I would. And then I kind of excused myself, and I told the guys, I'm going to go down and tell. We had this massive group of people who had come, and they were all gathered on the Field of Legends at the museum, waiting for what we thought was going to be a Hall of Fame celebration announcement. And I told the guys, I said, I need to go down, and I need to tell the folks the verdict, and then I'll come back and get Buck. And Buck, I think you should address the group so we can let everybody go home. And I tell you guys, it was the absolute longest walk of my life from the second floor of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum downstairs to our gallery on the Field of Legends. I don't know what it feels like to be on death row, but that was as painful a walk as I ever had, because I didn't think that I was going to be able to get these words out without breaking down. And, you know, I'm telling myself, you know, I'm talking to myself, I'm trying to pump my own self up. You know, you're a professional. This is part of your job. You know, you cannot break down. And even today, I have no idea what I said. I said something to the people, whatever it was that I said, there wasn't a dry eye in the room. There were some 300-plus people who had gathered there for what we thought was going to be this Hall of Fame celebration announcement. People are openly weeping. Buck walks into the room. And, of course, the room erupts into a huge, thunderous ovation. And then Buck O'Neill walks up to the podium, and he gives one of the most amazing concession speeches that I'd ever heard. And really, guys, in that instance, he literally wrapped his arms around a baseball world who was mourning the fact that he had been so callously omitted from what we all thought was his rightful place in the Hall of Fame. And he wrapped his arms around all of us and said, "It's okay. It's okay. Don't be mad. Don't be bitter. Don't be angry at anyone who had anything to do with this decision. Just keep on loving old Buck. If I'm a Hall of Famer in your eyes, that's all that matters to me." It was an amazing thing to actually witness.
And Bob, you know, you talk about how this moment and the thunderous applause when Buck walked into the room, and there was my greatest memory of Buck O'Neill. It almost brings tears to my eyes when I think about it. It was just, I went out to a Royals game one time with my dad. It was just a random Royals game. It wasn't any sort of special Negro League tie-in or anything, and Buck was just sitting in, you know, what's now the Buck O'Neill legacy seat at the game, and they showed him up on the Jumbotron. There wasn't any sort of a tagline across or anything. They just showed him, and they literally had to stop the game from continuing because the entire stadium stood up and gave him a standing ovation. I just couldn't believe it. Like, to this day, I still tell people about it, and I still talk about how it's one of the greatest sports moments of my life, just because I thought it was so cool. And it just kind of, looking back on that being one of the greatest memories I have, you know, you talked about all these stories of Buck. I mean, it's impossible to pick one, I know, but if you could, you know, what's one of the greatest memories that you hold from Buck O'Neill from all your dealings with him in your whole life?
And you're right. There are many. And I tell you what, that moment in February of 2006 was one of the most amazing things I ever saw in my life, because the strength that he exhibited, you know, that and I guess it all comes from really knowing yourself and having confidence in that self-belief. To understand that the Hall of Fame didn't define who you were, and I think that was a tremendous display of courage and strength. But, you know, probably one of my favorite moments with Buck was playing golf. You know, on many occasions we played golf together, but on this particular case, we played our last round of golf together that summer of 2006 with the great writer Dave Kindred, who wrote for many years for the Sporting News. And Dave was writing a piece on Buck's love of golf for Golf Digest. And we go out and we're playing Wolf Creek, which is a very difficult golf course for anyone. You know, now Buck is 94 at the time. And anyway, we're driving out to Wolf Creek, and I've got Buck in the car. And I said, "Well, Buck, you know, we're going out. We're going to play Wolf Creek, a very exclusive golf course. And, you know, they don't even allow women to even come on the premise." He said, "You don't say." And he sat there for a minute or two, and he says, "Bob, you think they're going to let us play?" And so I said, "Yeah, Buck, we can play." And so we get out to Wolf Creek, and my good friend George Hobbs, who works for Easy Go, and Dave Kindred, myself, and Buck, and we go out and we play this round of golf, and Buck shoots 94 at age 94. And we're sitting at dinner that night, and he looks over at me and said, "Well, you know, Bob, I shoot my age, but that ain't a good score anymore." You know, and Dave writes this story around this like 70-foot putt that Buck makes. We're playing this par five, and Buck had hit a bad shot to get things going, but he got on, you know, on his fourth stroke, and he needed to make this putt to save par. You know, and he's a good 70 feet away from the hole, and you know, and Buck is a little upset with himself, and he gets up to he started talking to himself. "So I show him something, Buck. You show these young boys something." And he hits this putt, and wouldn't you know it, he drains it from about 70 feet. He's running around like a little kid. "I told you I was going to make it. I told you I was going to make it." And that moment for me kind of capsulizes and crystallizes that great spirit, but almost, you know, also how much fun we had on the road, eating dinner, eating breakfast, traveling, playing golf. Those are memories that I'll just hold with me for the rest of my life.
You know, and I'm we've got people in the chat room that are just getting all sorts of choked up here, and I tell you, I've never had an episode where I've had wet eyes, and this is amazing. I mean,
little dusty.
Amazing. Kind of just a quick note. I don't want to get you in trouble on anything, so if I ask anything that can get you in trouble, please feel free to not answer. But obviously there's the Buck O'Neill seat at the Royals. Are they financially involved with the museum? Do they help you guys out, or is that just a way to honor Buck
the
seat?
No, the Royals have always been great partners of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. It's a relationship that we're really excited about. It's a relationship that continues to grow and get stronger. And, you know, they're working really hard to make sure we're in a great position as we get prepared for the All-Star game. They're supporting of the Buck O'Neill birthday celebration. The legacy seat was absolutely brilliant. I don't think you could have come up with a better way to remember Buck and to pay tribute and honor to Buck. You know, there were a lot of people who were questioning what would happen with his seat. Some wanted to pull it out, memorialize it. Man, that seat's too good. Buck would have never wanted that seat to go empty. But to recognize ordinary people who do extraordinary things, it's all about service. Buck O'Neill lived his life to serve others, and to have that kind of juxtaposition where ordinary people who do extraordinary things are recognized with the opportunity to sit in Buck's seat, absolutely brilliant on the case of the Royals.
Well, we got about a minute. We're going to come back on the other side, and we're going to do 15 more minutes of this. Like I said, this has been an absolutely amazing experience for all of us involved in the Royal Man Report. Obviously, we're all here. It's rare that everybody from the
crowded
show.
Crowded house.
I mean, this has been an amazing experience. But earlier today, we filmed the very first Fake Ned Yost cavalcade of characters or something like that. But it had on it local KC band Isaac James. You can check out ramblingmorons.com. You can check out the first show, but check out Isaac James and all of them. But I wanted to tell a quick tie-in here. Isaac James, lead singer Gil, his sister has a sculpture in the Buck O'Neill area. Her name's Reen Patterson, so check out her sculpture the next time you're there, and we'll get your opinions on that when we come back. But we'll be back on the other side. 15 more minutes of this, of what is going to be the greatest show we've ever done. We'll be right back. Welcome back into the Royal Man Report and our special Buck 100 edition with Bob Kendrick of the Negro League Museum. Been a very emotional day here at the Royal Man Report. We've got people crying in the chat room. We've got stories being batted around the chat room at royalmanreport.com or livestream.com/royalmanreport. Again, big thanks goes out to Bob Kendrick for taking the time both last week and this week to do this with us again. And you know, I'm just, I absolutely can't thank you enough, first off, because I'm just out of my mind. This has been an amazing experience for me. I'm so upset that I didn't get the chance to take in the tour with the guys, because I think it would have been, I know it's going to be an experience for them that they get to hold on to forever. We were kind of talking about Major League Baseball's involvement with the Negro League Museum. One thing I always think about, and I think it's what sets some players aside from others, is, of course, on the field is what matters to most fans. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes there's something to be said for being a good person in baseball. And when you're working at the museum, how often do you get requests from, be it the Royals or other teams, to have players come down? Do they just come in like normal people, or do you get sometimes requests for teams to come in? What's it been like with Major League Baseball?
Well, you know, most of the time we'll get the request. They'll give me the heads up and say, hey, you know, we've got some guys from the White Sox, or this year we had guys from the Orioles, or we had guys from Arizona Diamondbacks when they were in town. And so, you know, they'll typically give me a heads up. CC Sabathia makes this a regular visit when the Yanks are in town. And, you know, it was interesting. We were playing the Buck O'Neill Golf Classic when the Yankees were in town this year, and CC calls me, and I left the golf tournament to go meet him at the museum. He's a huge Negro Leagues fan. As you can well imagine, his favorite player is Satchel Paige. and what is not to like about Satchel Paige? So I can certainly understand that, you know. And so we're getting more and more of the guys to come by and visit the museum. We need to get more of them. We continue to try and make that outreach effort to get those guys in to get a chance to see what this is all about. You know, this museum is something that every baseball player, irrespective of color, should come in and experience, because as I was sharing with you guys last week, there is no greater example of love of the game than when we talk about the story of the Negro Leagues. These great baseball players truly love the game to endure what they had to endure to play this game in the country and to prove that they could play this game as well as anyone. And that's a story that never goes out of style.
And I would say not only every Major League Baseball player, but I'm talking Little League.
Absolutely.
You know, college, high school. You mentioned something last week that, I mean, this is all about baseball. All those guys wanted to do was play baseball.
Play ball,
and they endured hell.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all. And I got tremendous chills when you said that. All they wanted to do was play baseball.
That's it. They just wanted to play ball. And so if they had to sleep on the bus and eat their peanut butter and crackers because in the town that they had just played in and just filled up the ballpark, they couldn't get a meal in that town, or they wouldn't have a place to stay, or they couldn't even use the restroom. But they would never allow that adversity to kill their love of the game. So, you know, they would. They sleep on the bus, eat the peanut butter and crackers, move on to the next town, put on a great show, until they got into an area that offered black establishments so that they could get something to eat. But, you know, and that's why I say you won't experience a greater demonstration of love of the game than you do when you look at the story of the Negro Leagues. And you're right. Every kid that plays this sport, every professional athlete, they should all come in and get a better understanding of what others really endured to play this game. But not only that, how good they were at this game. You know, you're not just talking about a bunch of guys who were just out there playing baseball. These guys could play. And the Negro Leagues would take a backseat to no league. You know, and I still think, guys, the most difficult thing for our visitor to understand is that there were two professional baseball leagues operating at the same time. One, we know everything about the Major Leagues. The other, we know very little about the Negro Leagues. And so people are just now discovering these great baseball heroes.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, for me personally, I got a history degree from the University of Kansas. So the whole idea of history, and then when you mix in baseball, that whole story, you know, when you go to the museum, the first thing you see is, you know, everything. You start the beginning. You start with baseball. And, you know, as long as there's been baseball, there's been, you know, there's been black baseball, white baseball. It's the same game.
Yeah.
And you get that story as you go through the museum. The thing that I really took away from it was that, you know, you've got all these news clippings, and you know, you've always got all those. But the oral history and the stories that you tell, and you know what you hear about this personality or this player and those things, that's what really makes it come to life, is because you're not just reading it. You're hearing the stories. You're hearing about, you know, how they were traveling on the road and how, you know, they would be, you know, you show up. And in Kansas City, for example, you could have Charlie Parker right there by Satchel Paige, you know, and that's history. It's right there. And it's something that a lot of people don't always realize is there. And I don't think the story is told nearly as much as it should be and could be.
And it's history that is unique to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always like to say that the Negro Leagues Museum is Kansas City's gift to the rest of the world. But it is unique to Kansas City. You can't get this anywhere else but in KC. And that's what makes it so special. And, you know, the stories are just so rich, and they're entertaining, and they're inspiring, and they're compelling. And, you know, when Rube Foster established the Negro Leagues here in Kansas City, and Rube being the tremendous visionary that he was, and I still say the greatest baseball mind this game has ever seen that nobody knew anything about was Andrew Rube Foster, who would draw a circle on the first baseline and a circle on the third baseline. And if every one of his players couldn't drop a bunt inside that circle, they would be fined. Rube Foster would fine his players as much as $5 if they were tagged out standing up. They were supposed to slide. You see, you know, he was so adamant about the style of play that became signature Negro Leagues baseball. Very fast, very aggressive, very daring. So they would bunt their way on, and they'd steal second. They'd steal third. And as old Buck would say, if you weren't too smart, they steal home. And it was such an exciting brand of baseball in comparison and contrast to the Major Leagues at that era, which was a base-to-base kind of game. So guess what? At Negro League games, you actually had black and white fans sitting side by side watching, truthfully, guys, the most entertaining baseball being played in this country. Some will argue the best baseball being played in this country.
And we've still got a lot of chatter going on in the chat room, but Katie, she's our friend that I was referring to earlier, who grew up around Buck and had the ability or had an experience that none of us have had of being around him, and talks about how he did everything with humility and what have you. And he's just, oh my God, this has been such a great night to hear all these stories in the chat room. And I mean, they really just need to get you, somebody needs to go in and just put you on tape. And I mean, you go, you know,
let him go.
Right, you go to the K and you go in that little room in the museum and you watch that video on the Royals. And I tell you what, maybe I've seen it too many times, but I know you guys have a theater there. They need to do something like that where they alternate at Kauffman between the Royal story and the Negro League story, because I would love to hear you tell this story and to hear people like Katie tell their stories at the K in that theater once in a while, because I think we're just missing out. I really never understood how valuable the museum was until today. I really can't speak to that enough. And again, I'm so glad I forget which college you said it was that got you guys on Twitter.
Webster University.
I'm so glad they did, because I know that, like I said, the Royal Man Report, we're going to buy a plaque for us come Wednesday. And, you know, I would love to do one singly if I could right now, but we're going to do one together. You know, that's going to get us a membership you were talking about. You can go to the website, Negro League Baseball Museum.com.
It's just the acronym NLBM.com.
And go there, check out their membership options. There's all sorts of different ones. And even if you can't afford a membership, God knows we're in a recession, folks, but if you have a little extra money, definitely look at that. And we're not the kind around here to beg for money, but this is a cause that I truly believe in. Get out there, you know, give 10 bucks, give 100 bucks, whatever you have, but make sure you're helping these folks out, because it's priceless.
And you're right. And if nothing else, bring your family to experience this. Mm-hmm. You know, if nothing else, if Kansas City will come down and support what is truly one of the best baseball and history museums anywhere in the country, that means just as much. Because I think once you walk in there, you will walk away celebrating again and cheering the American spirit, because that is what the foundation of the Negro Leagues is all about. It is America at her worst, but also America at her triumphant best. And you will walk away having fallen in love with this museum once you come and experience it.
We got about 5 minutes left, and this would not be a real podcast about the Negro League Museum and about the Buck O'Neill story without the story you tell about Cool Papa Bell.
Well, you know, there's so many great stories about Cool Papa Bell, and of course the one that everybody loves is the fact that Satchel says that Cool Papa Bell was so fast that he could walk in a room, turn off the lights, get in bed, pull up the covers before the room went dark. Well, that is a true story. Cool Papa and Satchel were teammates on the great 1935 Pittsburgh Crawfords, one of the greatest baseball teams ever assembled. 5 future Hall of Famers playing in their prime at the same time. So they had Satchel, Cool Papa, Judy Johnson, Josh Gibson, and Oscar Charleston on the same team at the same time. Dynamite team. Well, when they traveled, they were roommates. So in this particular instance, O'Cool gets to the hotel room before Satchel does. Turns on the light. There's a delay before the light comes on. Cool flip the light switch off. There's a delay before the light goes off. O'Cool Papa says, uh-huh. When Satchel gets to the room, Cool's waiting for him. Roomie, I'm so fast, I can flip this light switch off, run over, hop in bed, cover up before the room gets dark. Satchel was so out. You know, Satchel was just like, oh, well, Cool, you fast, but you ain't that fast. And so Cool Papa Bell bet his meal money, and old Satchel took the bait. And in one of the greatest sports pranks of all time, because that light had a shortage in it, old Cool was able to flip the light switch off, run over, hop in bed, cover up before the room went completely dark. Satchel was so outdone that he just always told folks that Cool was that fast. So that's how that legendary story came to life.
Love that story.
There is a that is, yeah, what an amazing story. And I tell you this, Bob, we've got a few people in the chat room at RoyalManReport.com or RoyalManReport.com/livestream. And it looks like a lot of $20 bills are getting...
Like, it's kind of a pledge drive.
Yeah, there's all of a sudden a pledge drive in my chat room here. And it looks like we're going to have a few more... Let's just say we're going to have a few more donations to the museum before the end of this. And that's what it's about. I mean... Yeah. You know, we are so happy to have Bob on. I really can't speak to that enough. And this has been such a phenomenal experience here. And as we kind of run out of time here, want to tell us a little bit of the Don Newcomb signing bonus story?
Oh, what a great story.
I love that story, too.
And this story is told directly to me from Don. And the story that we're talking about is Don, of course, joined the Newark Eagles. And Effa Manley was the female owner, the only owner to be nominated and inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. She and her husband owned the Newark Eagles. Her husband was Abe Manley. So the story has it that she wants to sign a young Don Newcomb to a minor league contract or to a preseason contract. It was going to pay him $100 a month if he made the team, $400 a month. So Mrs. Manley had this huge mansion in Newark. They bring Don over to the mansion, sit him down strategically at a little table that looked up at a spiral staircase, and when he was to get there, they were supposed to come up, give her the signal. She's going to come out of her bedroom. Newcomb sits down, he says, and they go up, they get Mrs. Manley. Mrs. Manley comes out wearing a beautiful red evening gown that had a long split right up the middle. And so Newcomb says she kind of sashays her way down to the table where he's sitting, sits down in the chair opposite of him, crosses her leg, and the split on the dress open up. And so Newcomb says, I signed my contract right there on the spot.
I guess that is definitely a great kind of bonus there. You know, Bob, I say it now. I said it last week when I don't know if I told this story on the air or not, but I was out of town dealing with my stepfather, who's very ill with liver cancer, when these guys went to the museum. I get an email from Mike the next day that says, it was to me and Chris, it says, 15 minutes isn't going to be enough. Of course, we had Jason Parks on finally last week. The first time in the history of the show that we have two amazing guests that we can't just bump somebody out of the way to let you go an extra 15 minutes. You know, so we have this conversation. I'm like, well, there's nothing we can do now. We get you on the show, and by the time we had you on, we were winding up, and I ran over to the phone because I had asked these guys as we were going out in your last story, I said, do we want him in studio next week if I can get him? And everybody resoundingly like, said yes. You know, we're out of time here today, and we could honestly probably talk to you for another hour. Please, folks, go out to the Negro League Museum. Check it out. You know, donate if you can. At least go out there and pay an admission a couple of times a year. Help those guys out. Let's do some quick hits here. First off, the website for the museum, www.NLBM.com. You can donate there. Firstwatch.com for information on that.
And you can get also on the museum's website, too, for the First Watch event on Friday, November the 11th. Big autograph signing at 11 o'clock, right after the run. The 2.2-mile run is at 8 o'clock. Big autograph signing at 11 o'clock with George Altman and Joe Carter and a bunch of other former Negro Leaguers. Come hear them talk about Buck and the impact that he had on their lives, and then they'll sign autographs afterwards. And then we'll party on Saturday night. We'll see some red dresses out there for sure.
And nice. Don't pass up a red dress. Well, never pass a red dress.
Guys, you know, we don't do the norm. We normally have an intro where we go, or an exit where we go around. We just don't have time. Check out Mike's website, kingsofkaufman.com. A lot of great stuff coming from Fake Ned. Find him on Twitter, fakenedyost.com, royalmanreport.com. Guys, we are out of here. Thank you so much. We will talk to you next week.
A worthy honor for a baseball great, but not the one fans of Buck O'Neill had hoped for last year. KMBC9's Brenda Washington gets fan reaction to news of what the Baseball Hall of Fame is planning to do.
Old country preacher said, dead noses can't smell roses.
The fact Buck O'Neill wasn't inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame still riles people.
Even though he did fall one vote short, they should have put him in anyway.
I think it's a shame, not for just the Negro Leagues, but for all of baseball.
Talking about Sanchez said, all right, says now is the time to prove this thing.
At the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, the house that Buck built,
they are going to honor him in the Hall of Fame.
Word was spreading the Baseball Hall of Fame will honor Buck with a Lifetime Achievement Award named in his honor.
He should have been in a long time ago with other people prior to 1947.
I wish he had gotten honored while he was still alive.
A little bit too late, but, you know, it's never too late, and it's still a good thing.
The Negro Leagues Baseball Museum director says the award is a worthy honor and puts Buck's name in an even greater spotlight.
What the Hall has done now is created an even greater stage. You know, it gives even greater meaning to the contributions of Buck.
Supporters also say this will give a big boost to building Buck's dream of converting the old Paseo YMCA into the Buck O'Neill Education and Research Center.
We think that we'll pick up some steam now.
As for what Buck might say about the award.
The greatest thing, in all my life is loving you.
Brenda Washington, KNBC 9 News.
Buck O'Neill died last October at age 94. The Lifetime Achievement Award will be presented every 3 years. The Hall of Fame will also erect a statue of Buck inside the museum in Cooperstown.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.